नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So today evening we are going to discuss from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 13, text number 28 and 29. Chapter 13 is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. So we have verse number 28 on the board. I am going to take this word by word, and those of you who feel like, y'all can respond. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam parameshwaram vinashyat svavinashyantam yah pashyati sa pashyati. Some translation: one who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. So let us once again concentrate on this translation, because here the definition of sight is being given. What does seeing mean? Let's say, for example, what is this that I'm holding in my hand? Kartal. How do you define Kartal? What you're seeing is a piece of metal held by a thread in the center. But when I asked you what you are seeing, most of you all replied Kartal. So what is actually sight? Right? What is sight? Why didn't some of you say thread around which there is a piece of metal? No, there's a cloth here. Isn't it? Can you see this cloth? Piece of cloth? Why wasn't that observable? Because already we have some conception of what this thing is. That conception governs what we see. So in fact, our seeing is what our conception allows us to see. Here in the 13th chapter, this is being discussed in detail. What is real? Sight. And by such vision, there is going to be immense benefit. Immense practical benefit. So here, once again the translation, one who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies. One who understands that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. Verse number 29, the translation is, the verse is, samam pashyam hi sarvatra samavasthitam ishwaram na hinastyat manatmanam tato yati param gatim. One who sees the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Ever had this experience in one's life that always makes one feel embarrassed and regret? Oh, why did I do that? Ever had this experience? I remember when I was quite young, as a young child, our kitchen in our house, my parents' home, where I grew up, this was when I was just maybe in my early teens, or maybe just 8 or 9 years old, maybe 10 years old. I'm not exactly sure. Yeah, it must be in my early teens. And in our kitchen, since I have a sweet tooth, you know this phrase, a sweet tooth? Ever heard this phrase, sweet tooth? Sweet tooth means I naturally like sweet things. There's no problem with sweets. You know, sweets, nothing special in them actually, in one sense. But then I have a natural attraction for sweet things. You give me anything sweet, and maybe I'll find a taste for it. So the kitchen would have some containers, and some of these containers would be very attractive for my sweet tooth. One of them was the container that contained sugar granules. I loved it. That container was as if my soul partner, that dabba. I enter the house, the first thing I would do is enter the kitchen and look at the dabba. Is it there still? Then look inside if the sugar is still there in sufficient quantities. I move out of the house. It was as if I was parting from a very lost, dear friend, you know. Oh, I'm going right now out of the house. Right? Now, one interesting experience which really embarrasses me and makes me regret what I did. One day, I happened to come to the kitchen. The dabba was nowhere to be seen. It was as if my world had come to an end. You know, as a young boy, in early, maybe 11 years old at the most, I'd come in and I was especially desperately in need of satisfying my sweet tooth. So I come in, the dabba is not there. What do I do? Well, what does a desperate young child do? Started searching the kitchen. I looked everywhere, the dabba wasn't there. I was really hoping my mother had not become, you know, too much conservative. Such as I might, I could not find the dabba. Then right under the kitchen sink, you know that there's a kitchen sink. Everyone who's been in the kitchen, they know what I'm speaking about. The kitchen cabinet is very good to look at. Then there is a sink. And under the sink, there is a small cabinet door. You open that and it takes you into a dark world full of cockroaches. I don't know why, what made me do it, but I opened the door to see if the dabba was there. I did not find a dabba. What I did find was a plastic bag. A transparent white plastic bag, half filled with white granules. What is the sugar doing there? I removed this packet. For me, it was like a friend, a lost friend found. I took the packet in my hand, and without wasting a moment's time, I did not even take a spoon. Just put my hands, my small hands inside, took a palmful and threw it into a mouth and immediately threw it out. Yuck! Yuck! What did I eat? It wasn't sweet. It was more like astringent, acidic. What did I eat? What was this? Maybe it has something to do with my hand. I've come from outside. So I washed my hands. Wiped it on my clothes. Natural thing to do, isn't it? I still remember this so vividly. because this incident is imprinted on my mind. And again, put my hand into the plastic bag. This time I took just a pinch and put it into my mouth. Again, I spat it out. I was confused. What's this? The next morning, I tried to just nonchalantly, you know, as if nothing had happened. I said, Mother, what is that? You know, plastic, there's some interesting plastic bag with white, something white inside. She said, yeah, my father is actually a scientist. And he used to work, he's retired now, but he used to work for the government as a scientist, in the capacity of a scientist. So, sometimes he gets some chemicals home, especially that are useful for household affairs. This was oxalic acid. White granules, if you know what's oxalic acid. My father told me, and I knew chemistry by then. I was maybe in my sixth standard, so already I knew chemistry, so I knew what's oxalic acid. I never forgot that incident. Later on, when I read the Bhagavad Gita, I said, oh my God, I degraded myself to the level of eating oxalic acid out of a plastic bag from the cabinet door under the sink. So now you know my secret. Ever face an incident like that in our lives where the mind has degraded us such that we feel regret, we feel embarrassment? Well, at least I do. One of these incidences are there. Maybe some of you don't. But most of us must have, because that is the nature of the mind. It does do that. Put us through some degrading situations. You know, like you are very well dressed and trying to cross the road, and when you're crossing the road, suddenly horns are honking all side and pedestrians are shouting at you. You are the only person, you know, crossing the road because you are in your own daydreams. Nicely dressed and so embarrassing, isn't it? Hey, samajh mein nahi aata kya? Hey, pagal, marna hai kya? You know, and you're in your best clothes, you know. You just shampooed your hair and you put on nice scents and you have nice shoes. And people are pagal. And you know, some more special words. How embarrassing. What to speak? When one is in a situation, you know, supposing you're on stage and you're off trying to welcome the chief guest, you know, very confidently doing that. And as you hand over the bouquet to the chief guest, you know, maybe your wig slips. Something happens. And you're so embarrassed. Well, I mean, I'm just speaking. Something could have happened, you know. You just, maybe you're walking towards the chief guest and you slip. You never ever slip. You are the best cadet from in the National Cadet Corps. You know, you've received the best cadet award for the best march. You never slip. One never slips, but there you slip. Etched in the mind. How did that happen? The mind for a moment lost focus. Sometimes it is understood that it loses focus. Sometimes it is not understood. Sometimes it is very clearly understood, oh, what a cheap thing to do. And sometimes it seems as if, are all the odds against me? No. We are simply not keeping focus. Yes? So that is what is called as hinasti. Hina asti manaha atmana atmanam. That the mind makes one feel disgusted in certain circumstances. So one who can see the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus, he approaches the transcendental destination. So these are two verses we are trying to discuss today. You see, in the 13th chapter, the chapter began with Arjuna's asking a question. That I want to know the definitions of a few things, a few items. One is, what is material nature? What is prakriti?
I've heard so much about Prakriti, you know, material nature around. What is it actually? How do you define Prakriti? What is Purusha? Or the controller of Prakriti? I know, I mean, I can see things are controlled in this world. If I need to improve the temperature in my room, I have my thermostat or I have my air conditioner. Well, I can see that there is a particular way the climate in this particular region works. This particular zone that we are there, the tropical zone, will have 4 to 6 seasons. You go to a temperate zone, they may have just 2 or 3 seasons. We see that, you know, there's day and there is night. So yes, there has to be a Purusha or there has to be a controller. Isha means controller. Yes. So there has to be someone who's controlling. So can you define what is Purusha in terms of, in relation to or vis-a-vis material nature of Prakriti? Then what is Kshetragya or the field of activity? I can see that with my body I can do certain activities, right? I'm talking here. Isn't it? But can I make everyone talk whenever I want them to talk? Seems a difficult proposal, isn't it? Whenever, every time I feel, you talk, unless and until I have remote control, you know, I've got control over you, it's not possible. But I can control myself. So this body seems to be a field, it seems to be a region where I can perform certain activities, I can get certain activities done. So that is called Kshetragya. So what is the definition of Kshetragya? Because sometimes the body does not listen to us too. I mean, I want to sit up and watch the late night soap opera there, you know, the soap show going on. And the body simply shuts down. It's too tired. So, what is this Kshetragya actually? Can you define that for me? Kshetragya? Kshetra actually. And what is Kshetragya? Or someone who knows, I think I know my body. But then I go to the doctor and the doctor tells me something I never knew. Does he know or do I know? Right? I mean, I know the body, but the person sitting behind me tells me, hey, there's something at the back of your head. Do I know my body? I cannot even see what's at the back of my head. Someone else has to inform me. So, Kshetragya. Gya means someone who knows. So, who is Kshetragya? What is the understanding or the definition of Kshetragya or the knower of the field of activities? Then what is Gyan? What is knowledge? You know, is engineering knowledge? Is cooking knowledge? Is managing a corporate knowledge? Or is politics knowledge? Is a combination of everything knowledge? Like once Srila Prabhupada, he went to a high school. Yeah, it was a high school. 10, 11-year-old students, maybe 5th, 6th grade, America. 5th, 6th standard, according to India, they were there. So he very congenially, very nicely asked a few boys their names. Then he said, who's the most intelligent boy in this class? Good question. Everyone is eager to answer. So one of the intelligent boys raised his hands. Yes, I am. Everyone else conjured, all right, let him do it. You know, agreed. Okay, he is the most intelligent. So he said, all right, you're most intelligent, come ahead. So he came to the front of the class and he said, where is your hand? And he said, this is my hand. Where are your eyes? These are my eyes. Where is your stomach? This is my stomach. Where are you? And the boy is confused. Like, is this me? Where am I? And then Srila Prabhupada started explaining about this soul. So Gyan, I think I know who I am or what. So what is really Gyan? Gyan is knowing how my hand works. You know, a plastic surgeon, especially who just knows about the hand. He does not know anything about your face, plastic surgery. He only knows there are specialists like that. All they deal is with hand plastic surgeries. You know, very fine plastic surgeries. You ask them, what about my face, doctor? You know, I have a slight wrinkle here. They say, please go to a face surgeon. Is that knowledge? They know the in-depth knowledge. They know all the muscles here. They know everything, the fascia or the interconnecting connective tissue inside. They know all of that. My mother, she's got such elaborate knowledge of cooking. My God. Even Tarla Dalal will not have such knowledge, I guess. I don't know whether she still comes. When I was young, she used to do cooking on television. Dalal's cooking book. My mother, with wheat flour, I think she can make n number of preparations. Sweet, sour, peppery, salty. Just with wheat flour. I mean, how much can you do with wheat flour? As far as I can think, bread, maybe chapati, maybe roti, fulka, tandoori, what else? She brings out all this totally exotic items. Now, is that knowledge? I wish, sometimes I think my mother is the most intelligent person in the world because I have no idea why a puri fluffs up like that and a paratha just stays like this. Absolutely no idea, but she knows. And all her knowledge is in her hands, here, in her fingers. Just by the texture, she says, ye phulega, ye nahi hoga. No dynamics about, you know, air pressure, combustion, nothing. She has, but she knows. Best of the scientists will come with all the measurements and measure, but she'll get out the product. Now, is that knowledge? Is the mechanic there having more knowledge? Sometimes people go, you know, I talk with students and that students of, people sometimes just say, diploma students have more knowledge than engineering students. Sorry, engineering guys. Boys, engineering boys, I'm really sorry, but they have more practical on-hand knowledge. You know, they can use a lathe machine better than an engineering student because he does not know what a lathe machine is except on diagrams. Never been to the workshop, but diploma students have been there. Is that knowledge? So what is knowledge? So, gyan and gyayam, that which is to be known. Is everything to be known? What? Now, root of 2, I mean, it would be something, square root of 2. Right now, I've forgotten, but it must be 1 point something. Yes, math students somewhere here. Square root of 4 is 2. Square root of 2 must be 1 point something. A square root of minus 2? No, does it even exist, minus 2? It does. But square root of minus 2? Oh, I can find out somewhere. But what about square root of an imaginary number? I. Now tomorrow I say, all right, since you are propagating a theory of square root of I will propagate the theory of square root of D. There are 26 consonants. So is square root of D supposed to be known? No, not at least in present day mathematical study. But square root of I, yeah. Am I right? Is that how it works? Isn't it? Correct? Does it work like that? So what is gaya? Or what is it that is supposed to be known? Is it, you should know all the verses of the Bhagavad Gita? Or maybe just one verse is sufficient? What is it to be known? So these questions have been asked by Arjun. 6 simple items Arjun wants Krishna to define them clearly for him. Now Arjun is a very, very intelligent, brainy chap. Very brainy person, very intelligent. Just look at what he's asking. He's asking, can you define material nature to me? Now, if he can have the definition of material nature, we only know how to use the resources around where we are. Supposing we had an idea of all the resources and how to utilize them in the entire universe, won't you feel powerful? Just imagine. Right? Most of us here, or how much does the resources extend to in terms of understanding, let's say, computing, computer science? Different grades according to how much we've been exposed to the field of computer science in Bombay, maybe in India. Do we have any idea of what are the, you know, advances taking place in Illinois, or maybe where in Moscow? Or in Tokyo? Here is Arjun asking a very intelligent question. Define for me material nature. This person is really intelligent. Even from the material point of view. We When we read Bhagavad Gita, we think, well, Prakriti, why is he asking this? How does it matter to me? But the most materialistically aimed person, or someone who has aim of materialistic enjoyment, would be very much interested in understanding what is the definition of material nature. Because that will allow him knowledge and the means to utilize resources for one's enjoyment. The first time, this is actually true, the history of tea. It was discovered by the English in one sense, but the Indians already knew about it. They would use it on and off whenever the need was there for some medicinal use, home medicinal use in the areas where it was grown. In the highest, on these slopes, on the hills, the higher hills, hilly regions there. What they would do is, they would boil the leaves, strain it, throw away the water, and eat the leaves. That is how tea drinking actually began. This is history. One day, somebody was in a different state of consciousness. Inebriated, you know, intoxicated maybe. So he thought, all right, this is what I must have. So took the water and drank it. And it felt very nice. Better than eating the leaves. So that began the concept of drinking tea. Straining and drinking the water. Strained water of the leaves. So in one sense, this took place maybe around 300 years back, 200 years back. I'm exactly not sure at what time phase. What I'm saying is, let us suppose this event happened in 1729. All the people before 1728, I mean 1700 years, or even let us say 28 years, for benefit of doubt, maybe before that people did not know about tea. Let us say since 1700 to 1728, since the time that they were... 28 long years, their knowledge of this resource of material nature was throw away the water and chew on the leaves. Strained leaves also, not the fresh leaves. The leaves that had been strained out. Means everything is gone from that. That was knowledge. That was the knowledge of, or that was how they used that material resource till someone accidentally stumbled on drinking it. And got a kick out of it. Now it has become an addiction. Dangerous. Better to give it up. But what I'm saying is, hardly people knew how to use the resources. I mean, in India, they used to put all these precious stones on all these monuments, you know. The Mahabharata states, Arjun needed some gold. So where did he go? He went to a place where many, many years back, Brahmanas had just thrown away gold plates and gold utensils. They felt, what is the use of this? Why do we need gold? Today we wish, you know, Arjun had left a map of where all this was there. Even one gold plate would have been sufficient. So how to use the resources? Practically not many of us know. We don't even have the means to achieve those resources. What to speak of getting the benefit from them? So Arjun is very intelligent. We should not take these questions that he is asking as, you know, maybe it is just theoretical. There are reasons behind why he is asking each one of these. Anyways, for us, these particular series of verses is going to conclude the knowledge of what is real vision. Arjun has asked questions about what is knowledge, what is to be known, who is the knower, what is the field of activity. So last 28th onwards, 27th onwards till the end, the verses are going to explain Jnana Chakshu, or the eyes of knowledge. When you say this is Kartal, what we are seeing is just metal around a piece of thread. But our Jnana Chakshu is telling us this is Kartal. This can be used with another piece and can make some very nice sweet sound. That is called Jnana Chakshu. Sometimes it can be very, very funny also. Jnana Chakshu. Like, one of my friends from the villages, so one particular personality, he went to the West, to an Indian house, a devotee actually, this is a true incident again, and they served him for lunch rice noodles. Ever had rice noodles? Anyone know what is rice noodles? Everyone knows what is noodles? Maggi noodles. Well, instead of, you know, corn, Maggi generally has corn flour and maize. These are rice noodles made from rice paste and then processed. So if you look at noodles, they are these actually slimy things. Long and cylindrical, various shapes. So when they served him these noodles, since he's from a village background, he spent his complete childhood working the fields. In the fields, the only thing which are slimy and cylindrical are earthworms. So when he got them, he said, "Why are you serving me earthworms?" Now this is again Jnana Chakshu, but wrong Jnana Chakshu. The Jnana is there that anything cylindrical and slimy is, and that coils up, means earthworms. That is what I've been exposed to. One of our devotees, the first time he came from a village, the first time a village bus came, the bus came there and they were all surprised. Actually in India, the first time when they saw a steam engine, people would not sit inside because they thought it was a demon which was letting out black smoke and, you know, screaming in an agonizing voice. So they would not sit in it because they thought this demon is going to take us to hell, which actually it does. In one sense, it's so hellish to sit in an Indian train, you know, despite all the improvements that we've had. So when he saw this bus come into his town, he saw, "Oh my God, it's a bus." And then he saw the steps and it was a new bus actually. So he said, "Oh, I must..." And they were inviting, come in, passengers, come in. We'll take you for a ride or we'll take you to your destination. So he left his slippers outside the door and went inside. On the ground, climbed his steps. When he said, such a clean thing, you know, something that is actually worshipable in one sense, we should not take our slippers on it. So then the destination comes, or the conductor says, "All right, everyone has to get down. This is the last stop." So he gets on and starts looking for his slippers. He says, "Where are my slippers gone? Where are they gone? 10 miles behind." So again, Jnana Chakshu. So real Jnana, there is some Jnana, but the application has been wrong here. When we speak of Jnana Chakshu, it means application of spiritual knowledge. How does one apply spiritual knowledge? Krishna has already explained what is soul, what is super soul. He's explained Prakriti, he's explained Purusha, he's explained Kshetra, Kshetrajna, Gyan, and Gyayam. He's explained all these six concepts. What do we do with it? So this last series of 8 verses, 27 through 35, 9 verses, they help us to understand how we as the soul are totally untouched by everything that happens to the body. And the strength or the conviction, a feeling of security to remain unaffected from the events happening to the body comes because the super soul is sitting right beside us. Just like a young child, right? When he's alone, even a small dog, he gets fearful. Right? But this young child, when he's with his father, the father may be just, you know, 2 feet taller than him, a midget maybe. But still, if he's a father, even if a big elephant is coming, he says, "Papa, I'm not afraid." Why? "You're there with me. You stop the elephant." Because if the child has full faith, man, there's the strongest personality in this world is my father. The person who can give me complete security is my father. There's no one as strong as my father. Till the time they come to puberty. When they come into their teens, they realize something else. But then, this is true, isn't it? So similarly, the faith and the conviction that
all the changes that are happening to the body, all the happiness and the distress and the honor and the dishonor and the hunger and the thirst and the lamentation and the fear, anxiety and the troubles and the tribulations and the glorifications, everything that is being received by this body, we are completely untouched by it. The soul is not affected. The soul does not become engineer soul. The soul does not become doctor soul. The soul does not become conductor soul. In fact, Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj in one lecture was saying, the soul does not, is, I'm just paraphrasing, it does not even become a cow soul or a bull soul or a dog soul or a hog soul. Or an earthworm soul or an amoeba soul. The soul is soul. Untouched by whether it is the body of an amoeba, it is the body of an elephant, the body of a brahmana, the body of an American, the body of an Indian, the body of a male or the body of a female. However, practical experience shows us that we are very much touched by these things. Right? The male is touched by the male ego, the female is touched by the female concept of life, the Indian is affected by the Indian concept of life. My God, I'm trying to practice Krishna consciousness since so long, but I go into another country and I'm so fearful. I hope they don't reject me at the port of entry. I'm never fearful of going from Maharashtra to Gujarat, although I may not speak Gujarati. In fact, I'm not even fearful of going to Tamil Nadu, because even though that language is totally foreign to me. Because when I go there, I say, anyways, these are Indians. I mean, what will, at the most, what will happen? Nothing. I'll say, Mera Bharat Mahan, and they'll say, yes. So, me se ninyan me beiman. Right? Something like that, someone told me. Still, even if that is the glory of India, even if there is only one person, still India is surviving. That's actually true. Once I was at the railway station and I was taking a ticket, and the person gave me 12 rupees extra change. Please have faith in me when I tell you, I had an intense struggle to return back the 12 rupees. I had to remind myself, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness. Because something free, that too money, Lakshmi. How can you say no? The first instinct is to be behemoth. Later on comes in age the quality, hey, wait. You are supposed to be leading a different way of life. The first instance is, phukat mein nahi milega kya? Anything. Even when we are distributing Gitas and everyone knows it's for a donation, they say, free mein hai kya? You know, it's not, but still they'll ask. Aapko to free mein dena chahiye. Bhagwan ka gyan jo hai, bech rahe ho. Paper bech rahe gyan. It's... printing costs money. You sponsor, we distribute for free. No problem. We take on the distribution rights and the tension. You just sponsor. You sponsor the paper, you sponsor the printing. We give it for free. No problem. But since no one is sponsoring, you would need to take some money to print the next book. So the first thing is to try to exploit. Then we remember, no. So, when we go to this chapter, the 13th chapter especially, it gives us a great insight into how, as spirit soul, we are totally untouched by all the waves in this ocean of material existence. Totally untouched. And where do we get the strength to be untouched by the waves? On our own, it's difficult. We have to accept that. It's so very difficult not to feel sad when we see someone in difficulty, especially our near or dear ones. It's so difficult not to feel a little jealous when we see someone receiving something that is very dear to us. So the strength and the conviction and the faith to remain totally unaffected is to understand the super soul is always with us. And the super soul is the supreme personality of Godhead who always remains untouched. he not only remains untouched, he knows that he is untouched. And he is not only knowing that he is untouched, but he knows of his prowess, his power to save others from the effects of material nature. To save the soul from the effects of material nature. That conviction comes when you understand the super soul. So in the 20th verse, this is the main theme, this verse. Real sight is to always see the super soul accompanying us. Sometimes we may be so down in our life, so depressed. We feel we have no friends. We feel we have no hope. We feel there is no way that we can come out of this deep gorge of unhappiness. Dark. But even there, Krishna is with us. And he has no business being there in one sense, because he never ever falls into such unhappiness. He accompanies us. Why? Because he is super soul. So if he is there, and wherever he is, there is always transcendental happiness, we can also come out of it. Whatever the depressive state may be, how much ever tribulations there may be in this world, and we may be down under, we may feel we have no friends, we may feel we have no one we can turn to, super soul is there. In such circumstances, never ever betrays us. The super soul accompanies us within our heart throughout our sojourn, throughout our journey in this material world. And we may be at the topmost destination of our ambitions. We may be at the peak of all the glory that we want to achieve, which makes us again feel alone, because there's no one to share with. We are the only ones there. Very lonely, very arrogant, very proud. And everyone who becomes proud has a fall. Definitely there's a fall expected. Once you're on the top, inertia is not possible. Momentum will be there. And the only momentum from the top is towards the bottom. And if you do not know how to come down, we'll tumble down. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. The crown will break. The crown of glory will go. Ever met someone who would always speak of the glorious past? Hamare jamane mein to humne aisa kiya tha. Right? Always of the glory in the past. And can you see that flicker of remorse? That flicker of something very precious having been lost on their face? Or can we feel it within our own consciousness when we go through the same experience? Even then, when amongst all this pride and arrogance that totally makes us aloof, makes us so arrogant, makes us reject everyone else, thinking that they are all below us, even there Krishna is there to save us. Even there Krishna is there as a super soul. So this knowledge, not just knowledge, but the vision, even in the dense depths of all depression or the topmost peak of all glories, if we can see Krishna accompanying us, then the depression or the euphoria does not affect us. For we have the proper vision. We see this is just time giving us some sadness or some happiness. Jatasya hi dhruvor mrityur, dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. For anything that is born, there is going to be death. Sadness has been born, it will die. It will go away. And for anything that is dead, birth is again certain. Happiness has been born, it will die. It will come again. Because it has died now, it will be born again. The happiness is going to come in some other form, but the experience is going to be there. For the soul, there is neither happiness nor unhappiness. Why?
Because we see the super soul in both the situations, neither being depressed nor being euphoric. Simply accompanying us, trying to save us from all these situations. So, what is important is to understand how the body functions, or what are the changes to which the body goes, how it is affected by the changes in material nature. This is all prakriti. And then to understand the purusha, the soul, how it is different from the body, the proprietor of the body, and the parampurusha, or the super soul, who is the proprietor of all bodies, including this one. And to see their relationship in proper perspective. The body is meant for the soul to receive happiness and distress according to the past activities. That's it. Right? It's like getting into a BST bus. Once you buy the ticket, it's either happiness or distress. Depends on which seat you get and how the road is. Yeah? So that's it. The body is just like that BST bus. The ticket is there. Now depending upon the seat that we are on and the road that we are going to travel on, there's going to be sukha or dukha. It is going to come and go. We are the proprietor of this body. The body is not our proprietor. In other words, we have to tell the body, get up now, go to sleep now, eat now, go to the toilet now. All these habits have to be, the body has to be told. The Western concept is, if you see the children in India, they're trained right at 3 years of age. I hope they're still trained. They're 2 or 3 years of age. That's it. Child knows now is not the time to go there. They go to the place where they have to evacuate. But in the West, there's no such concept. I have to go. I don't want to go. I mean, my parents used to tell me, 6 o'clock, wake up, go first. Now that habit stuck. It's healthy. It's good. But that's not there. Where there's no proper understanding, it's not there. Why? Because we get controlled by the body. Right? We get controlled by the body. I have my sinuses full. My noses are as if, they have been... They are like the Indian tunnel ways, always blocked on the roads. Still I see the ice cream wala and I say, but you have... No, this ice cream cures my sinus. How will it ever cure one's sinus? Why? Body is demanding. But then we are not supposed to supply the demands of the body. Why? Because we are the proprietor of the body. We forget that because we don't have the knowledge. The soul is the proprietor of the body. The soul has to tell the body, now don't get sick. Now sit down and get some knowledge. Tell the brain. Now sit down and relax. Now do some painting. Train oneself. Whatever one's talents may be. It requires to understand that we have the talent. The body is the medium through which the talent is being exposed. However, we are not the total controllers. I mean, I cannot tell my heart, stop now. I mean, we should not. But can you imagine? All right, my dear heart, I have to climb this mountain at 4,000 feet, So start pumping more blood. Now, if I have only 30% capacity because I have had 2 bypasses, do you think my heart will listen to me? It won't. Which means I am not in total control of my body. I may be the proprietor, but I am just the proprietor on rent. I have taken the house on rent for some time from someone, and if I want to change the door frame, I have to call up the owner and say, this door frame is really not what I want. Can I change it? And the owner says, no. I say, oh, yes, boss, what can I do? I have to follow whatever he says because he is the owner and the actual proprietor. I am simply the proprietor till the time I am paying the rent. The rentee. So similarly, this body, although I am the proprietor, there is the real proprietor, the super soul. Everything belongs to him. So this perspective has to be understood. The body proprietor is the soul. However, both the body and the soul are actually under the proprietorship of the super soul. Once we understand this, then we understand what the super soul wants of us, and we can understand how to use the body to achieve that. So that is called Gyan. And since we are trying to understand this, we become the Gya, or one who is understanding this knowledge. What does such knowledge allow us to do? Sa Pashyati, Ya Pashyati, Sa Pashyati, right? Yes. One who sees this actually sees. And verse number 29 explains that a person who sees this approaches the transcendental destination. Not only the super soul within me, that this body has to be used in a particular way, but the super soul is within this devotee, the super soul is within that person, the super soul is within that lady, the super soul is within the child, the super soul is within the dog and the ant. We know how to use them also. Use has to be there. Things have to be used in this world. Jiva jivasya jivanam. That is how this world functions. Everyone is dependent on another one and has to use them. How to use them? Such as not to trouble them unnecessarily, not to trouble oneself unnecessarily, but it is a wonderful exchange of mutual benefit. Sarve sukhino bhavantu. That is a Vedic concept. This is how everyone can be happy. The dog can be happy. The ant can be happy. The male can be happy. The female can be happy. The child can be happy. The old man can be happy. Whole universe can be happy. When we see that the super soul is also present in all the living entities. Not just know, but see. When we see another person in distress, we understand this person is now in his deep gorge of unhappiness. But the super soul has not left him. How dare I chide him? How dare I chastise him? How dare I laugh at him? The super soul within the body is not laughing. Am I greater than Krishna? Do I laugh at this person? How can I shout? How can I become envious of another person who is more glorious than me? The super soul is within that body, and Krishna has much more power, prowess than me. He is not becoming jealous. He is not becoming angry with that person. How can I become angry? Who am I in front of Krishna? Does one coexist peacefully and happily? Free from all the emotions of either euphoria or unhappiness, depression, free from all this and the range in between, in one's transcendental situation. A wonderful reciprocation of love between Krishna and the soul. So that is Tato Yati Param Gatim. Such a person attains the transcendental destination. So the theme of verse number 29 is that when one gets the vision to see the super soul within the bodies of all the living entities, such a person protects himself from the degradation that the mind can lead one to. How degrading it is to laugh at another's misery. Because Krishna is not laughing. How degrading it is to become jealous of someone else. How degrading it is even to feel that I am actually the cause of somebody else's achievement. Krishna never claims, hey, this is my family member, you know. Sometimes we, you know, become proud. My brother or my sister or my aunt is such a great person. Krishna is right within that person's heart as a super soul. He never claims, I am right within him, next door to him. He never takes any glory for himself. Isn't it degrading when we do it? But the mind degrades us to all such levels. So a person who can have this vision, or when we, through the knowledge that is there in the 13th chapter, have this vision, it saves us from much embarrassing situations. Not just saves us from embarrassing situations, but allows us to reach the transcendental gati, the transcendental destination, or real happiness in this world. So that is what the Bhagavad Gita affords us. Every chapter is so wonderful. Including the 13th chapter. People sometimes become so fearful of the 13th chapter. Oh, it is so technical. It has got so much of technicalities. This, that. No.
It is very sweet. It is very beautiful. Because it has been spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore it is sweet. So to conclude, just in short, how does here in the purport to verse number 29 and actually further on, he explained that the sight to see Krishna as a super soul in every living entity is easily achieved when we are in good association. Or someone, we are with someone who actually has that sight. Or who actually is aspiring to have that vision. And such, it gives us companionship. Oh yes, I have a few others who are on this path. So there is one story about a robber who once heard that a king was throwing a big function in which he had invited many religious personalities. The idea was, and only the king knew this idea, or it was his plan, that I have a daughter of marriageable age, and somehow there's no one coming forward to accept her hand. So, and also I do not want to give her off to just any Tom, Dick and Harry. I want her to have a suitable match, someone who can properly take care and satisfy my daughter also. She's a princess. So he decided that there are few people who are really very much advanced in their consciousness and also materially advanced, and I would like them to, you know, one of them to be my son-in-law. How to get them together? So he threw a function, a big religious function, and invited all the religious heads of society to come. Every member who had some religious standing in society, he invited all of them. I have a satsang program, please come. So they all came. And according to the hierarchy, they were given different seats, different rows. So the front row was taken by sannyasis. The next row was taken by vanaprasthas. The third row was taken by brahmanas. And the fourth row was, from then onwards, for general people. So the robber came there and said, oh my God, sannyasi, I cannot be there. The vanaprastha, I cannot be there. The grihastha, brahmanas, impossible. I'll fourth row. The first chance I get, I hope. He knew the king's plan. The king's plan was, I'll give my daughter in marriage and half my kingdom to my son-in-law. So everyone was sitting. And then the king, he came on the mic and he said, so I have my daughter here. She was beautiful. And half my kingdom. One of you who wants to marry her, please come. First chance given to the sannyasis. Sannyasis says, what? We came here thinking that there's going to be some religious discourse and we can speak about some religious matters. You want us to marry? We do not get into... We have given up this long time ago. Therefore, we have no business here. They got up and they left. The first row was empty. The robber felt, ah, first row competition gone. Chances have improved. Second row, the vanaprastha said, we've already experienced the life of a householder. We're trying to become renounced. We're trying to give up all these attachments. We don't want this anymore. Say they got up and they left. The robber felt, oh my God, this is really my good day, lucky day. Then the brahmanas, they said, we already have a wife. We are satisfied. Why do we need another wife? And why do we need a kingdom? I mean, our needs are very few. We came here because we thought we'll hear some sannyasis speak. They have gone. What are we doing here? So they got and left. And the robber was there, the first person in the fourth row. He said, my chance has come. So the king approached the robber who was well dressed. And he said, will you please take my daughter's hand in marriage? And the robber said, my dear king, I have seen three rows of people just go up, get up and leave. I had come here because I wanted this. But seeing that they have rejected all this, I think they have something better than this. So I am also leaving. And he gets up and leaves. He leaves a beautiful princess behind and he leaves half the kingdom behind. How does he do it? Did he get any spiritual knowledge? Did he read the Bhagavad Gita? No. He associated with those and seeing their conviction, those who had this knowledge, seeing their conviction, he just got up and left. So similar, I'm not saying that all of us have to leave like that. What I'm suggesting is that if we get the association of personalities who have such knowledge, it's very easy to reach the transcendental destination. So thank you very, very much. And now we'll have